Have your festival calendar handy? You can check off the Steel Horse Rally, the Power of Music Festival, Brewgrass, Funkberry, and the Bentonville Film Festival. They're already in the books for spring 2017, but we're just getting started. This weekend is the Fayetteville Foam Fest on the downtown square with beer, music, and food trucks and more. That's 5 to 9 Saturday night. Underway now and lasting for most of May is Artisphere, the celebration of the integration of art and nature presented by Walton Art Center. The entirety of Artisphere is much too much to list here, but there is the Artisphere Orchestra, family-friendly shows of dance and theater, the annual Trail Mix concerts, and much more all over Northwest Arkansas. There's visual art, too. Diane Burko's exhibition, Glacial Shifts, Changing Perspectives, Bearing Witness to Climate Change, is a collection of paintings and photographs in the Joy Pratt Markham Gallery at Walton Art Center in Fayetteville. The art provides the viewer a from-the-top look of many of the world's glaciers and ice fields. And Diane Burko places images from different decades together to let us understand the scale of glacial shift and melting. Last week, Diane Burko was in Fayetteville for the opening reception, and a few hours before that reception, she came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio. She says the up-in-the-sky angle can be intoxicating.
I love seeing things up above because it's like the macro to the micro, but I like both experiences. When I went to Svalbard, where we were going to be on a small boat, actually it was a three-masted barkentine, they called it. It really was small. We were sailing around Svalbard, which is 10 degrees below the pole, 400 miles north of Norway. I knew that that view was a land view, you know, looking across, getting off the boat, getting into a zodiac, climbing. But it's not the same thing as encompassing and comprehending what this archipelago looked like. So being able to study maps, but also then literally fly and experience the flight and the overview, to me is really kind of essential to my practice.
If you're overlooking a grid of streets, say, or neighborhoods, it makes sense to our 21st century eye. But a glacier, how hard do you have to realize what is the different part of the terrain? Because it can begin to look all the same to a neophyte.
Yeah, that's a good question. I guess that's why the bird's eye view is so good, and also I study maps. So, you know, I understand that the glaciers that I've seen in Patagonia, which straddle Chile and Argentina, you know, along this kind of alpine kind of crest, well, they're very different than looking at the ice field of Antarctica, which is like one big continent of ice. And it's different from looking at Greenland. But I know that because I've studied the map of Greenland. I understand the outlines of Greenland. And then you can go further in, and then, you know, I could do paintings about Jakobshavn, Ilulissat, and I've climbed around Ilulissat. I've flown over it. So I think it's all of those experiences cumulatively kind of, you know, contribute to the work. Yeah.
When you're studying a map of a glacier,
mm-hmm.
it's not Fifth Avenue, take a left.
No.
So what are you studying?
I'm studying the shapes, basically. I'm looking at the overall shape of a glacier. And then when you fly over a glacier, you know, most glaciers are made between mountains. You know, they're the ice that falls, the water that was, that then becomes a glacier. And then if it's a glacier that goes out to the sea, a sealift glacier, well, you know, it's flowing there. But there are also mountain glaciers. And they keep changing. And you also see the lines of how they move. A glacier is a living thing. It's not stationary. It recedes up, it moves down, it advances, and it recedes. The problem, of course, today is not much advancing and lots of recession because of climate change.
When you're going to capture, not with a photograph, but with a work of art that you create with your hand, a glacier, when you're up above, do you capture that essence? Are you sketching as you fly above?
Nope, I'm photographing.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you're in a helicopter? You're in a plane?
Sometimes I'm in an open-door helicopter. Sometimes I'm in a fixed wing. It depends on the circumstance. We just came back from New Zealand and also Australia. But particularly in New Zealand, I wanted to see Franz Josef and Fox Glacier, which are in the South Island, which are both melting, and that's what they call their Southern Alps. And I climbed on them, but then I also did helicopter. So again, both those experiences kind of contribute to the work I'll do.
Do you talk to the locals about the diminishing glaciers?
Oh, yes, I do. And not only the locals. Actually, on one of the tours, we had to go on a tour in Fox Glacier, and I started sort of introducing information to the tour guide, you know, as she was speaking. And she took me aside and she said, "This is really good. Tell them more about climate change." And I said, "You really want me to?" And she said, "There are people here who don't even know about that. And especially people from Asian countries, some of them have never seen a glacier before." So she was very pleased with my throwing in these little tidbits. So I had an exchange going with the tour guides.
Most people haven't seen a glacier.
That's right.
The
That's
biggest
why
population centers are far away.
Absolutely, yeah.
Here's a chance. Explain to someone what it's like to be on a glacier, knowing that different places, different glaciers are different. But what's it like?
It's like nowhere else in the world. The first glacier I ever stepped foot on, with my crampons, of course, was Kronobriand Glacier in Svalbard, this archipelago I told you about. And I hopped off a helicopter with a bunch of scientists who were there to gather their measurements, actually, wind and all sorts of measurements that were really measuring the ice and how the ice had risen or fallen. I just was astounded. I stood there, and it felt like I was on top of the world. And I wasn't. I was 10 degrees below the pole. But, you know, all around me, you know, for as far as I could see, was the horizon. It was all white. It was all ice and then the blue sky. And, of course, I took pictures of that.
How many different shades of white and blue exist?
Thousands. You know, ask an Eskimo.
Have you been able to better distinguish between a different kind of white or a different kind of blue?
Well, you know, the notion about the blue is known. The bluer the ice is, the older it is. So if you look at an iceberg, if it's really, really, really blue and clear, that means there's no air bubbles, there's no oxygen in it. So that's the oldest ice. And then, you know, it keeps going from there in gradations. But I'm an artist. I'm a painter. So I make them any color I want.
Is it humbling to think about how old some of this ice is?
Oh, God, yes. Not only is it humbling, it's frightening. Because, you know, if you speak to scientists, glaciologists, they call themselves, these are guys that are studying ice that goes back 800,000 years. I was talking earlier to the volunteers at the Walton Arts Center, and someone asked, well, you know, how do you talk to someone who doesn't believe in climate change? What do you do? And I said, well, I'm very respectful. I mean, not everyone has knowledge, and it's good to share knowledge. And I just try to share the experience that I've had over the years studying this field. And, you know, it's not a belief system, climate change. It's just a scientific fact. So how did I arrive at that? Well, one way is knowing about the 800,000-year-long record that scientists have been able to capture through ice cores. And Lonnie Thompson is one of the pioneers of that from Ohio State University. And he and his wife, Ellen Mosley Thompson, were some of the first people like 40, 45 years ago to start going to Peru, which is, you know, south, and also to the Arctic, and drill into the ice and go down into the history of the ice and then look at it, study it, and find out what all the different heights and lows were of warm climates and cold climates, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So pretty amazing.
When someone sees your work and you're not there to talk about it.
But, right.
You know, which is most
of the time.
Right.
Yeah, definitely.
What can your photographs, what can your images do for those people, those of us patrons who are looking at it, without the benefit of your explanation at the time?
That's a very good question. Hopefully, when I have an exhibition, I'm working with a curator who knows how to do wall text, and there are explanations, and they are, I must say, in the Walton Arts Center show. They're really well done so that you have a background. If you look about the artist, you find out where I've been, what I've done. But the actual titles, I use the titles of my work to impart information about climate change. And I did a whole series once. This was a show called Politics of Snow. It was in 2010. And one of those examples is in this exhibition. And what you do is you have the same glacier from 1935, photographed by Bradford Washburn. And then I have an image of the same glacier from 2005. So if you look at those wall labels, it might hit you. There's a difference there.
All right, I've got three possibly silly questions in the
interview. Go right ahead.
All right. Number one, you've been to both poles.
Yes.
How does one get from Pennsylvania to the pole? I mean, you don't just walk into the airport and say, I want to go to the North Pole.
You mean how did I arrange to go, or do you mean physically go? I don't know.
Yeah, now how do you? I mean, how does one? Because at some point you hit the end of the road, and then you gotta.
Oh, you mean transportation wise? Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, let's do Antarctica because that's really the more exciting one. What you do is you fly, as you said. I flew to Buenos Aires.
Okay,
and from Buenos Aires you fly to Ushuaia. And Ushuaia, you know about Ushuaia?
Yes. That's on my list.
Oh, do
go. It's supposed to be a magical place. Take the train there, they say.
Oh, I didn't know you could take a train. We flew.
Okay.
And then Ushuaia is the lowest point of South America. And then you get on a ship. And the ship goes through the Drake's Passage, and you go down towards the Antarctic Peninsula. So that's how you do it.
How big is the ship?
Well, I have been very fortunate. Actually, a couple who's coming to my opening tonight helped my husband and I get a really great deal to Antarctica in 2013. And that was a ship of about 125 people. I don't remember how big it was. It was one of those ships, you know, big ship, as opposed to my going to Svalbard with 26 people. So this was like a real cruise kind of thing. But then you get into a zodiac when you're near land, near the continent, I should say, or the peninsula. And then you know, you're with about 10 or 12 people, and then you land on the actual Antarctic Peninsula. It's very exciting.
Bet. Yeah. Possibly silly question number two.
That wasn't silly.
Okay. Well, we still got two more chances. How do you dress if you're going to be at the pole?
That is a very good question. And that was my first question when I got my first residency because I don't like the cold.
Really?
There you go. I'm not a skier. I'm not really an outdoors person, except I'm always painting the landscape. But you know, I'm a New Yorker. What can I say? So I was really frightened about that. And I met people who just said, it's all about layers. It's all about how you dress. And I had a great parka. I got my wool underwear, and I was fine. Smart wool. I recommend it. And, of course, I had hand warmers in my pockets, and I had layers on my hands because, you know, you do have to wear liners so that I could shoot. You know, I couldn't wear mittens if I'm going to shoot photographs. So, yeah, you get used to it. And I have to also tell anyone who wants to go, you go in the summer. So it's not that cold. I mean, I'm not going in the middle of winter.
It's an ice station zebra or anything.
Yeah. I mean, 20 degrees was really the lowest it ever got. It wasn't bad at all. Yeah.
It still sounds cold, but it's not inhumane.
Cold. No, yes. I mean, in New York City, it's, you know, or Philly, it's been colder than that.
All right. Third possibly silly question. You've been to the polls. You've been all over the place. Is there some place you haven't been yet that you would drop everything and go tomorrow if you had an expense-paid trip?
Funny you should ask. It's not a silly question because I'm just about to begin a project with two musicians and a scientist about the reefs. Because the reef system is also in peril because of climate change. And we might be going to American Samoa in December. We've gotten our first grant, and we're working on other grants. So I might be switching gears and switching palettes and going from blue and white and black to lots of color, which I'm looking forward to. But I'm also looking forward to examining this issue because we just were in Australia. We did fly over the Great Barrier Reef. I did take photographs. So I'm very concerned about the death of a large percentage of coral throughout the world.
Death being an accurate description because we're talking about a living thing.
Coral is a living thing. It is dying, and it's part of our ecosystem, and it has to do with lots of things that protect us, a lot of ecology. And, you know, it's, you know, if I can give a plug to Elizabeth Kobert's latest book, The Sixth Extinction, we have a lot of problems here, and we can solve them if we just work together. I think we all have to take climate change seriously, understand it's a real problem. It's not a belief system. And I hope that my exhibition maybe brings people along to learn more about it and to be convinced that it's something we have to take care of for our children and our grandchildren and their grandchildren.
Diane Burko's exhibition, Glacial Shifts, Changing Perspectives, Bearing Witness to Climate Change, may be viewed at the Joy Pratt Markham Gallery at Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville through the end of September. The gallery's hours are Monday through Friday from noon to 2 and then an hour before most performances at the venue. Private tours may also be scheduled, and you can learn more at waltonartcenter.org. Diane Burko was in Fayetteville last week for the opening reception. You can find out more about her and see more of her art at dianeburko.com. That's B-U-R-K-O, dianeburko.com. Artisphere.com. The exhibition is part of the Artisphere Festival that integrates art and nature. The next immediate event in the Artisphere Festival is a performance by the Dover Quartet at St. Paul's Episcopal Church in Fayetteville tonight at 7:00.